Good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, Jean-Marc Grodi, here on EWTN. And once again, we have this great privilege to come together to hear a story of conversion, a story of the good things the Lord has done in our lives. We're joined tonight by Catherine Whitaker. She's a former evangelical Protestant and an author of, and I'm gonna get this right here, the book is Live Big, Love Bigger, Getting Real with Barbecue, Sweet Tea, and a Whole Lot of Jesus. And before I shake your hand, people probably can guess some of the accent that they're going to hear in a moment.
Yeah, you're going to hear a little Texas.
Great to have you, Catherine, on the show tonight. We're going to talk about your book a little bit later on. I want to make sure to mention your website, which is CatherineWhitaker.net. We'll have it up on the screen for those who want to look it up. But I'm really excited to hear your story
tonight.
Thanks for being here with us.
No, I'm happy to be here.
All right. Well, let's go back to the beginning. How did you first come to know Jesus? What's your religious background way back in the beginning?
There's a whole bunch. So yeah. I'll start with the first. So I was baptized Methodist. My parents grew up Methodist. So that was the logical place for us to be. Mm-hmm. And so really fond memories as a little kid. My parents were MYF sponsors. So Methodist Youth Fellowship. Okay. They were big in youth group. So we had a steady stream of high school kids knocking on our door. So as a little girl, spent a lot of time in the Methodist nursery. And really loved that community that my parents built for us. And then, as with happens with many Protestant churches, is that the pastor changed, and there was a big hullabaloo. And so we left the Methodist church when I was in early middle school, maybe second or third grade. And then we went completely opposite and went over to the Nazarene church. Wow. And very evangelical. And really, it's where I fell in love with Scripture and the Bible. Should I spell that? B-I-B-L-E. So we spent so many years at the Nazarene church. There was, revivals were a big part. So I was from a super small town in the panhandle of Texas, Dumas. And so there was, he was a former basketball player turned really, I guess, revival musician. And so he was a piano player, but he didn't read music. And his name was Johnny Ray Watson. And I used to sit next to Johnny Ray on the pew, and then whenever he would get to play, he would sit me right next to him, and he would play on the piano. And he was this big, like 6'7" man with this little, you know, fourth grader sitting next to him. And I think that's where I fell in love with this ability that music can play in your relationship and in your prayer. And so I should have mentioned, so I was baptized Methodist. And then when we went to the Nazarene church, I was baptized again, but this time, you know, full immersion.
Right.
So I definitely remember that. It was a big community event. Everyone in our parish was there, church back then. And I loved being a part of the Nazarene church. Pastor Chris was our pastor, and so many good memories of growing up being there.
Yeah.
I think of all the places that we went, that was maybe my favorite place that I go back to often.
So for your family, was there a big theological shift, you know, in terms of moving to there, or is that just kind of the community that you landed in?
I mean, our town was so tiny that the Nazarene church was two blocks away from the Methodist church.
Sure.
And I think it was just everybody sort of scattered from the Methodist church and went different places. And so we had a few people that came to the Methodist church or to the Nazarene church. Mm-hmm. But I really think it was our pastor.
Yeah.
Pastor Chris was really dynamic, and he really loved the Lord.
Yeah.
And I think that's what drew us there. And I don't remember things changing as far as like what we did in our house.
Right.
We still had a bunch of kids in our house, and I still went to Vacation Bible School. But it was very much something that we talked about. Like, Jesus was a big topic of conversation at our home. And then we were there. And then when, again, Pastor Chris left, everything sort of imploded. And I think that's when my parents decided that they were a little bit wary of churches. They weren't really sure like where we should go next. We were an every Sunday kind of family, go to church every Sunday. But I remember my dad getting in the car, and we got in, and he's like, all right, where you guys want to go to church this weekend? So we drive down the street, and we visited the Baptist church. We went to a different church, and then finally we landed at the Disciples of Christ church. And so we pulled in, and that was sort of my middle school year. So about seventh grade on is where we stayed in the Disciples of Christ church. And that was where I was baptized again. So definitely baptized.
Yeah.
Three times was the charm for me. And I think that's where I really became like a little bit more grown up about my faith. Like, what do we really believe? Why do we believe that? And we also had communion every Sunday. So while it wasn't what we believe as Catholics, but it was this every week, very serious. My parents were deacons in the church. So super involved, our youth group. That's where I fell in love with community and other people that especially other teenagers, because it was weird, awkward, like you're in middle school and it's awkward anyway. So the church was across the street from my middle school. So I would finish up stuff at the middle school and then I would just walk across the street, and we had a youth room, and the pastor's wife was my school counselor. Wow. So when I was going through some hard things in middle school, I would go talk to her and she helped me through it. So it was very familial. We had Wednesday night dinners and the whole church would come and we would have a big family dinner. And then the adults, I guess, would go do something important, like Sunday school or something like that, where we just went to the youth room and had fun, you know, played praise and worship, talked about life, did homework. I think I helped with like the little kids choir, even like the little preschoolers and kindergartners. So very much a community. And that was where we spent formationally the whole time that I was in middle school and high school. We moved to a bigger city, but that one stuck. We still stayed with the Disciples of Christ Church. And I went on mission trips and went down to Mexico and did all the things that I think you would assume most Protestants would do. And then I went off to college and thought, well, I'll be in the Disciples of Christ Church. And we got there and it was all old people, which I'm sure they were in their 40s. But to me, as a, you know, 17-year-old, they felt old. So I thought, well, maybe I'll just go to church with all my sorority sisters. So every weekend was a different church, and we kind of landed in non-denominational Bible church. So it was Grace Bible, and we just sort of floated around to different churches. And for me, I was just like, as long as you're talking about Jesus, I'm here for it. So to this point, I had met zero Catholics in my life. I had never seen a priest or a nun. I'd seen Sister Act, and I had seen Sound of Music, and that was it. Like, those were the only people. So I thought they only existed in movies, because in our little town in Dumas, there were, I'm sure there was a Catholic church, but if there was, we never knew about it.
Right.
So I grew up pretty, I think, neutral to Catholicism. I certainly didn't know anything about the church, positive or negative, and they were sort of just existed on my TV screen.
Right.
So it was a really beautiful sort of layering. As I was thinking about this last night, I was like, layering. I had this ability to see what community was like in the Methodist church, and then I was exposed to music and this really beautiful experience of how that ties to your community and it can deepen your prayer life. And then I think extemporaneous prayer and just building this faith base is what I learned as I moved in middle school, high school, and then on into college. But for me, it was never a question of going to church every Sunday. It just was never the same church.
Right.
So I think I had all major Reformation movements. I'm not sure about that, but we were pretty close.
Yeah. We're joined tonight by Catherine Whitaker, former evangelical Protestant. You know, one thing that jumps out, and I'm not going to get into it deep here, we'll talk maybe more about it later, but just thinking about like the principle of unity, right? That's something we would, like, what unifies a community? And certainly, I mean, you had this experience of like, of coming together with people who were on fire for Jesus, but then having the principle of unity sort of give way when a pastor would move, you know, or you'd go to a different Disciples of Christ church, and it was different, right? There's something certainly awesome and positive about those communities that come together because of this common love of Christ. But then there's also the other side of that, which is that there's got to be something additional that gives it continuity when a new pastor shows up, you know, or things shift. That's interesting.
Well, and I think that always bothered me, to be frank, is that I was frustrated. I was like, why can't we find like a place? Like, because theologically speaking, those are all very different belief systems, while same Jesus, but how that was practiced and laid out, very different. And I think growing up, I felt very unsettled. Like, we had so many different churches, but I was looking for like, can we just be consistent here? Like, you know, and it's not any fault or anything to my parents. I think we were seeking this place where we could call home. And, you know, when a pastor would leave you, it was almost like we had just gotten settled and then it would sort of get upended and we would be like, well, where are we going to go this weekend?
Yeah.
And so I think we were always in search of this permanent place that was consistent and intentional.
Right.
And of course the services varied widely. Mm-hmm. I mean, in fact, when I was in high school, our Sunday school teacher, so we were all juniors and seniors, so we were grouped by grade. So this was juniors and seniors. And so he said to us, we could stay here for the church and we could talk about all sorts of things. He said, or we can get in the car and we can drive to different churches and see how people worship. And so we went to a Jewish synagogue. We went to a Black Baptist Revival Church. We went to the Lutheran Church, like you name the denomination, and we went to it. And that was our Sunday school experience, is that we would go and we would see these churches, and then we would come back and we would talk about what did we see, what did we like, what made us uncomfortable, what made us feel at home. And it was like a case study in all these different churches in a very safe environment. Our Sunday school teacher was amazing, and so many good discussions came from that. And I think it started to open my mind of like, what else it might be out there? Not that what we have here is bad, but what else has Jesus prepared for us?
Yeah.
And but the one place that we never did go was the Catholic Church. Mm. We went to all the rest of them.
Particular reason, or it just didn't happen? Or?
I think we only had a couple in town, and okay. I think just when it came to the schedule, it just wasn't on the schedule. I don't think it was intentional. Maybe it was, but it didn't feel that way.
Sure.
So, but I do remember doing that. I had forgotten about that, actually.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely paved the way, opened you up to searching and being open to where Christ would be leading, you know.
Well, and just that it was possible to have community as good as what we had in other places, but could we find something even better?
Yeah.
I think it, and I think as an adult now, I look at that and think that it really did make me more empathetic as to how people worship and then what brings them, you know, in our case, what brings them to the Catholic Church, but what brings them to a church and what keeps them there, what sustains them.
Right.
And I saw that because we engaged with those communities. It wasn't just like we had a conversation with someone. We really did engage with those communities and do things with them. And it formed me, I think, to be open. I think God knew what he was doing, and he was mining the field, preparing me to be open. And I don't think at the time I realized that, but I do now.
Sure. Oh, beautiful. So what happened next, Catherine? You're still in college at this point,
I am in college, and I meet a really good-looking man who had, so we have the Corps of Cadets at Texas A&M, which is like a military organization. So he was in uniform, and he had really big biceps and big blue eyes. So we were set up on a blind date. I needed a date party, a date to a date party. So a mutual friend.
You hit the jackpot on the blind date.
I did. I totally did. I mean, it's worked out really well, but I, this friend was like, well, he's really good looking, but I have a boyfriend. So you should, y'all should hook up. So we went on this date, and the date was 2,000 cadets in a dining hall, all in uniform, all yelling, and me with like 10 of his buddies and his like his CTO, so his cadet training officer, and his 2-year-old son. And we were all there, and that was our first date. So it was, and I didn't even ask him. I mean, I think I knew he went to church, but I didn't even ask him where he went to church. And then I found out later, oh, he's Catholic. And I was like, ooh. That's fun. What's that? No clue what it was. And so that was my first, the very first person that I met that I knew that they were Catholic, and it sparked something in me. I was like, I haven't been to that church. Yeah. We should try that one.
It does exist outside the movies.
There is a church outside of all those other ones. Yeah. Yeah. So college was, and again, I was still bouncing. I mean, we were, like I said, I was bouncing around to so many different churches. So to me, it was just one other. Similar to like when my dad was driving us down the street and we were looking at churches on both sides of the street. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it felt like when I met this really good looking boy who really wasn't going to church, but said he was Catholic. And I'm like, well, I have a bunch of questions. Do you mind if I start asking you? And here we are all these years later. But it was definitely an opportunity for me to sit down with someone who was in a different church. And I could hear, what do you love? What do you not love? What do you believe? Why do you believe that? And I had, you know, so many questions as to why and how. And it was it was the one church that sort of eluded me. All these other churches I knew so many things about, but this one felt very foreign, but also really intriguing. But I wasn't quite sure what it was about it.
Well, given your background in these different communities and even very different theological traditions, like what were some of those questions what were your burning questions for him in terms of your experience at that point?
Well, my biggest question is this what y'all do every Sunday? Because at our church, the pastor may preach, you know, we had sermons, not homilies, much longer.
Yeah.
And sometimes we would have communion, sometimes we wouldn't. Sometimes we'd have like a guest pastor. So I was really curious. I was like, so this is what you do like every Sunday. So you do this, and then you have communion, and then you have, you know, the readings, communion. And so to me, the fact that it happened the same way every Sunday really kind of blew my mind because that was not my faith background at all. Mm-hmm. And then to know that that was happening in every Catholic church, not just in the United States, but everywhere, really kind of messed with my mind a little bit. I was like, I can't. One, I was super impressed that they were that organized, you know, that this many people knew that this is what you did. But I just didn't know the bigger community. I didn't know that. And then as I started to investigate, looking back, some of the key people that were really influential in my life were Catholic, but I had no idea at the time. But they were big mentors of mine, and it wasn't until later that God revealed, oh, yeah, by the way, they were Catholic. It's like when you read great, amazing books by people or see beautiful works of art, and you fall in love with the book or the art, and then you find out later they're Catholic. Like, it sort of all made sense. So for me, looking back, it all sort of made sense.
Yeah. So you're asking questions of this young man.
I was.
Yeah.
A lot of questions.
Yeah.
You know, why don't you go to church every Sunday? That was a big deal for me. Because I said, listen, I don't care where you go to church. I just need you to go to church. And so then he started to sort of pick up the pace. Like, I have this really, I think we were just still dating. We weren't really boyfriend, girlfriend at that point. And he's like, well, I mean, I kind of want to impress her. So maybe I should start going back to church. And because I was asking him questions, I think he felt like maybe I should go back to Mass and start to see what's going on in there.
Yeah,
so a lot of questions. For me, it was the liturgy. That was the big part for me, is I wanted to know why. Mm-hmm. Why did you put your hands this way? Why did you kneel? Why did you stand? Why did people, you know, shake hands? Like, what do all those things mean? I know that you do them, but why are you doing them?
Right.
I was really interested in the intentionality.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I wrote a book about it, but I was really interested in the intentionality of the Mass. Mm-hmm. I didn't really have... I mean, I did ask him a funny question. So we were at, we were eating lunch one day, and the priest from the Campus Ministry Center walked in, and everyone else is eating and no one's thinking this is a big deal. And I stopped eating. And Scott, my boyfriend at the time, looked at me and he said, what's the problem? And I said, is that a priest? And he looks at me and he said, yeah, I mean, that's Father Mike. And I said, what is he doing here? And he said, well, I think he's eating lunch. And I looked at my husband and I said, they let priests leave the church. Like, I had never seen a priest out in the wild. So the fact that we saw a priest who was eating lunch with students, I didn't finish my lunch. The rest of the time I was super fascinated that this priest was eating lunch with regular people and also seemed perfectly normal, because that wasn't my experience.
Right.
So there were questions that I would have for him like that he would be, Catherine, no one asks questions like that. So, and I think I even asked him what, so at the time, Pope John Paul II was Pope. And so I asked him, I said, so how many Pope John Paul IIs have there been? And he said, well, there's been one. So I said, but how do you differentiate all the popes? Because there's been a bunch. Like, how do you know what their names are? And he said, Catherine, they all have different names. I thought that they were all named Pope John Paul II. Like every pope.
Oh.
So I couldn't figure out, I'm totally outing myself here, but so just know that there's no dumb questions that you can ask. So I thought that they were all Pope John Paul II.
Yeah.
And I was having a really hard time figuring out how you could tell the difference.
It would simplify things a little bit.
It would, but now I realize that they have different names. But you know, but when you don't know, it's totally foreign to you.
Right.
I didn't even know who the Pope was. So I've learned a lot since then. But yeah, so those were some of the burning questions that I had as the infrastructure, but also why.
All right.
Why this one?
All right. Well, what happened next there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we started dating my freshman year, his sophomore year, and we really started to fall in love with each other. And my parents, I think, were a little uneasy about this Catholic boy that had captured their daughter's heart, whereas the Catholic friends in our life were like, this is amazing. You should definitely keep dating him. And I think we started to have the discussion, and I think faith background really informed the question that I asked him. As I said, so marriage started to become a topic of conversation. And I said, so if we get married, what are the expectations? And he said, well, I'm not going to a different church. I am Catholic, and that's where I'm going to go. And he said, so the expectation is that I would go to the Catholic Church, and then it would be great if you would go with me. It's not required, but this is where I'm going to go. And I think because I had been to so many churches growing up, I felt very strongly that I didn't want our children the imaginary children that we did not have yet. But I didn't want our children to be at mom's church with her one weekend and then dad's church another weekend. I said, I feel like if we're going to do this, we should do it all together. But I didn't really know what that meant. I just knew that I didn't want my kids bouncing around. I really felt like being, again, imaginary children that we had not had. But I knew that it was going to be something that we should talk about. We had gone through, we were starting to develop preparations for marriage. So our pastor who was at the Catholic Center, who's now a bishop, which is crazy, but he was an amazing priest. And we took the test and he walked us through what we were learning. And so I think that's when I started to say, well, if we're going to get married, then what does our wedding look like? And what is, you know, what does future look like? And so these big discussions started happening of what does this mean when we get married? And if we get married, where can we get married? Who's going to marry us? Who can be there? And it all started to snowball that I finally started to say, well, maybe I should join the church. But there was never any pressure from him. There was never even his family. So his dad, Church of Christ, never converted. And his mom, cradle Catholic, baby of 12. So there was never any pressure from any of them. They were always, you are welcome at our home anytime. And on my side of the family, I think my parents were just happy that I'd found a boy who loved Jesus. And so I think that we started to navigate what's this really going to look like. And so as we sort of marched toward my senior year, his fifth year, he proposed. And then we started to have discussions because we got engaged in December and then we set the wedding for July. And we're like, so when the priest set us down, he's like, so there's some things we need to talk about. And then, you know, that's where we left it. And we're like, well, I guess we have some things that we need to talk about.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was a baby. I was 21. So,
right.
Yeah.
So were there hurdles? Were there, as you started to work through those questions, or what did you,
I think I sort of set the hurdles to the side. Oh, like, yeah. I was like, oh, Mary, we'll talk about her later. And I just like pushed her to the side.
Okay.
And there were a few other things, like just general church teachings about life. Mm-hmm. Growing up in Texas, it was okay to save the baby, but perfectly normal to execute the criminal. And so this consistent life ethic, I think, was something that I was like, talk about that later. So I think many of the things that I grappled with as a young married woman, you know, as a young Catholic, I certainly just sort of pushed to the side that I'll deal with those later. And thankfully, God and Mary are very patient and allow the journey. I think it's important to give people time to walk the journey as opposed to just saying, this is what you should believe.
Absolutely.
And my husband was really gracious. And I think we sort of grew up together and that the things that even that he grappled with in his own faith, that we started to say, let's take them one at a time, you know, and let's look at this and how does this affect our marriage today? And then let's move to the next thing, as opposed to just blanket saying, I believe all these things because I'm opinionated. I'm a strong Southern woman. And I knew that it would be better if I took the time to really investigate that, pray about it, spend some time visiting with people that were much wiser than I was, and really believe it for myself as opposed to believing it because I felt like I should.
Yeah.
And so that's really been the last, you know, couple of decades is us sort of navigating through that. The big stuff we agreed on.
Yeah.
And then the other stuff I just sort of set to the side. So Mary and I are becoming reacquainted.
Sure,
As we get older. But I think those were some of the big things that we looked at. And then, of course, what does this mean for our family? Mm-hmm. As hopefully God blesses us with children, what does this mean as we pass that along to our children?
Yeah, we're comfortable in some sense thinking of God's grace. Like we think of God's grace and we recognize that He works through our freedom, right? He gives us grace, but he invites us to take each step forward. Sometimes we don't give each other that grace. As you said, it's such an important part of this. When we're working with somebody, we're sharing our faith with them, we want to imitate our Lord in giving grace, inviting, but helping them take the next step forward in freedom, right? Because that's the authentic step that brings about conversion, right? Not the pressured step, not the browbeaten step.
Well, I mean, even years later, when I went through Curcio, which is a really beautiful retreat experience, there was a theme that we had going through Curcio, and it's make a friend, be a friend, bring a friend to Christ. And I think we often move to the end, bring a friend to Christ, because we're like, we love Jesus. Can't you love him like this?
Yeah.
And I think the whole point is that you have to allow people the opportunity to discover Jesus in their own life. Mm. And that doesn't happen overnight. And I think back to all those years that I spent, which I would never change, growing up in all those different churches, that he was laying the groundwork for me to be where I am today. And I don't think I would be as convicted today had I not gone through all of that. So I don't want to deny someone else that experience. And I think that was sort of our mindset when we got married is, and we moved away. You know, we moved to Iowa for 2 years, left Texas, the protective state of Texas, and moved to the Midwest, the crazy Midwest.
Yeah.
And it was so good for our marriage. In fact, I think it changed the trajectory of our marriage. So I believe that all those places and spaces that he took us was preparing us, you know, for what life was going to bring us later on.
Well, let's take a little break there, and we'll come back and hear the rest of the story, getting married and you know, proceeding toward the Catholic Church and what happened after. So I'll be back in just a minute. Thanks for joining us for this episode. We'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Catherine's story. Again, I want to remind you of the name of her book, because it's a mouthful. I want you to have time to look it up. Author of Live Big, Love... I'm going to get this wrong. Live Big, Love Bigger, Getting Real with Barbecue, Sweet Tea, and a Whole Lot of Jesus. And her website is catherinewhitaker.net. I also encourage you to check out chnetwork.org, where you can find all sorts of stories like Catherine's from every imaginable background, people who come home to the Catholic Church. And we'd love to hear your story, so check it out there at chnetwork.org. We'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Catherine's story. See you then. Welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're entering the second half of our hour tonight, speaking with Catherine Whitaker. She's a former evangelical Protestant. She's been sharing her stories tonight. She's the author of Live Big, Love Bigger, Getting Real with Barbecue, Sweet Tea, and a Whole Lot of Jesus. And her website is catherinewhitaker.net. Catherine, thanks for sharing your story. You know, we left off, you know, you're approaching marriage to this Catholic guy, and it's all going well. What happens next?
So our priest starts saying, okay, so what are we going to do here? And I said, well, I want to be Catholic. Yeah. So I told my parents, and my dad said, do you love Jesus? And I said, yes, Dad. And he said, works for us, which I was not expecting my parents to be so open, but they were. But remember, so we got engaged in December. RCIA had already started, and I really desired, both of us did, to have a Catholic wedding. So we met with our priest, and he got special permission to confirm me before we were married. So he said, promise me that someday you're going to go through RCIA, make that someday pretty quick. And so I was confirmed an hour before my rehearsal dinner in like shorts and sandals. And my first communion was my wedding day. So I did get to wear the white dress. It was my wedding day. And then a few weeks later, I did my first confession when we moved to Iowa. But it wasn't until about 2 years later that I went through formally, went through RCIA. Our neighbors down the street said to us, we noticed that y'all go to church every Sunday, and we just want to join the church and wondered if y'all would be our sponsors. And so they came into the church, and that was our first time really to go through the RCIA process. And I know I did it the untraditional way, but it was the way that God intended for me to do it. And we were already, you know, fully engaged. But I do remember, John Mark, when we would go to Mass for the first several months, I would repeat in the car all the prayers. And I told my husband, I said, everyone is going to know that I'm brand new. And he said, no one is going to know, Catherine. So I was sort of petrified that I was going to be outed as like the new Catholic in the church. But as it turned out, nobody cared.
Yeah.
And we were blessed with some really amazing priests who, our very first parish when we moved to Iowa, the priest looked at me and he said, so I hear you're a convert. And I said, I am, like, brand new. And he knew how much I love scripture. And he said, I want you to be a lector. He said, I want you to proclaim the word. And that was single-handedly probably the thing that brought me even closer into the church, was his ability to recognize the way that I grew up and a way to tie that to the Catholic faith. And he was such an instigator of building community in his church. And I'm deeply grateful for that. And then we just kept going into these beautiful parish communities, which were full of life and vibrancy, but also were really challenging me. Because again, like I told you, I had all these questions. You know, when I first started, I thought women should be priests and all these things. And he kept introducing me to people to say, well, have you thought about this? Have you maybe asked this question? And so I started to be open to what the church taught. And it was just over a period of time that I started to deal with some of those bigger questions that I had and really ask the questions. We were volunteer youth ministers. So I was around teenagers who were really good at asking questions. And I would be like, yeah, I have the same question that she has, or that question that he asked. I want to know that too. So I was really learning along with our high school kids and really developed a love for the church. And so I would say that we went to church every Sunday. We were involved in the ministry of the church, but it wasn't until the Jubilee year. So in 2000, we were invited by our pastor to go with teenagers to Rome. So it was our first time to go to Italy. Wow. And he gave us this list of all these places that we were going to visit. And he said, okay, so everyone has to take a topic. And when we get to that place, when we get to Siena, when we get to the Vatican, you have to tell everyone, like, you're the tour guide and you have to tell them. So I took the Vatican and the Pope. And I even had like little passports that I gave everyone. And, you know, the daughter of a teacher in me was making them all cute. But that's where it changed. So I'm giving my report. And then I hear all this commotion, and Pope John Paul II is coming out in the Pope Mobile. And I have never felt like I was in the presence of holiness until that moment. And we were there, and he comes out, and we're with all of our kids. And it was such a beautiful, like, absolute massive encounter those 9 days that we were in Italy. Since then, we've been back 6 times. Wow. And we just took our kids, all 6 of them, over the holidays. And to talk about a full circle moment, you know, this time it was Pope Francis. So we've fast forwarded through a couple of popes since then. But to see how it all sort of came full circle and how that moment was so defining in my faith, like, it felt this massive affirmation, like, okay, you made the right choice. Because I think when I first went into it, I was like, oh, I'll join the Catholic Church. And if it doesn't work out, my dad's mentality, right? Like, we'll just drive down the street and choose right. a new church. I didn't really think that I was choosing, like, my forever church.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been until these last, you know, 5, 10, 15 years that I've really been like, you know what? This is it. We're not changing churches again. This was the place that God had intended for me to be all along.
Yeah, the journey doesn't end becoming Catholic. The journey doesn't end when you come to know Christ.
Right.
It doesn't come when you, you know, leave a particular sin or come to know Christ or join a certain church or you become Catholic. The journey continues.
Yes.
Right? And that's part of what we're reminded of each week by these stories.
Yeah, I mean, he just continued to lay this, I think, foundation of faith, this ability. And I think it's where I began to fall in love with the sacraments, because for me, it was the liturgy and the sacraments that was what was not only unique, but that was grounding. So the liturgy, I fell in love with it. I thought it was beautiful. I couldn't understand why everyone else couldn't see the beauty of the liturgy. Not only that it was consistent, but that it was meaningful, and that there was real scriptural ties to the things that we were doing, and that it was grounding. And so then the sacraments were just this, you know, balm of grace. But it wasn't until my own children started to go through First Communion preparation, confirmation preparation, and I'm the mom that does not cry except at sacraments, and I just lose it at sacraments, because the beauty of that moment, I did not realize all the grace that I got when I was married, all those beautiful moments of sacrament. And now that we fast forward to our children receiving them, is incredibly beautiful, and how healing they can be, and how empowering and how just sanctifying that they can be.
Yeah.
And it almost makes me, I think, mourn for some of my friends who don't know the totality of that, like what it can be. It's almost like when you're in a good marriage, but then it gets really great and you're like, oh, if people only knew. And so I think that's sort of how I look at my faith. I was like, if people only knew, you know, the beauty of this, like, we would have to, like, make the doors bigger, because so many people would be coming in. But it's become such an integral part of our family. And it certainly laid the groundwork when we hit some major obstacles when our 5th baby was born premature. Yeah. So the Catholic Church laid so many foundations of that, so that when the crisis did come, that we defaulted back to what God had been laying the groundwork all along.
Right, right. Well, I guess let's talk about those crosses. And I want to make sure to talk a little bit about your... I mean, up to this point, sometimes it's in the Catholic Church that people first have or encounter a theology of suffering, you know, of the cross, right? We have it in our image. We have it in our art, because... from your theological background up to that point, when a Christian suffers, what does it mean?
Well, I thought that because we were suffering, like, I had done something wrong. Like, Christianity to me was a life of not suffering. It was a life of abundant joy and zero hardship, and that people that encountered hard things must not be in doing it right. And then when our cross came, and it was our fifth baby being born early, at just, he was 3 pounds at birth. I remember looking at my husband saying, but this doesn't happen to people like us. Like, we go to church, we do the things that God asks us to do. We teach our children, you know, how they're loved by God. And how naive was I, this was 14 years ago, to think that that's the way that Christianity worked. And instead, it's this embracing of suffering, and that not just embracing it because you're supposed to, but embracing it because it unites you with Christ in a deeper way. I used to say that I used to have this very polite relationship with Jesus. It was yes, sir, no, sir. And then I started learning what it meant to have a real relationship with Jesus when our son Luke was born. And that's when I started cussing at Jesus in the closet. And I was like, this is hard, Jesus. Like, I can't believe that you're asking this of me. And he was like, finally, like, you're willing to tell me how you really feel. Now we can get somewhere. And so while Luke was the wrecking ball to our family and hospitalized 44 days in the NICU, wow, 15 specialists, 7 surgeries, had a 2 in 10 chance of surviving his first surgery. But I look back at all those things and I'm like, but that was God's invitation. Like, I think we could have gone one of two ways. We were going to go this way, further away, or we were going to be closer to him, but we could not remain in the same place. And my heart's desire was to remove closer. And, I know you may not appreciate this analogy, but in childbirth, when the contractions come, our instinct is to tighten up and like to fight the contraction. And I had a good friend who's a doula tell me one time, she said, Catherine, when the pain comes, lean into the pain. She said, because not only does it go away faster, but she said, you have to fight your body's natural instinct to fight, and instead you have to relax into the pain. And I've thought of that so many times, spiritually speaking, like how many times do I tense up and say, I cannot do this, Jesus. And instead he's saying, just lean in to the cross.
Yeah.
And it transformed our family. We are not the same, thankfully, that we were 14 years ago. And our other children are not the same because of our experience with Luke and the many doors that it opened, the many Catholic doctors that we found just because we had a photo of St. Therese in his room. And he is the person that I think saved our family.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's even if you do, you know, have the intellectual knowledge of sort of that theology of suffering, of that picture, it doesn't become real until you experience it,
right,
you live through it, until you walk it with Christ.
And this relationship becomes real. It's not this thing that you read about, or it's not just the story that you read in the Bible. Like, it's real. Like, he really did die just for you, for me. Like, mm-hmm. It wasn't for everyone. It was specifically for each individual person.
Yeah.
Because he desires a relationship with each one of us, not collectively, but just individually, that he says, I want to get to know you. Right. And it didn't become real until we had Luke. And I think the importance of the sacraments became even more important for me, particularly the anointing of the sick, that, you know, we did an emergency baptism. Like, I could see all these moments that I was like, man, it's the sacraments that I desired so deeply. I had the relationship with God. I had the scripture. I had the love of community, like all these things, but it was the totality of that massive affirmation that I looked at my husband and I said, I think we made the right choice here. But you don't know when you're in that moment, and then God continues to give you opportunities to sort of open your eyes. I sometimes say it's sort of like we had a home. And then when I became Catholic, it's like another door that I never knew existed, like another wing of the house was opened up, and it was even more magnificent than what I believed we already had.
Yeah.
And it's sustained us, but it's also given us a lot of joy and so many beautiful things in our family. I never thought that one little, oh, I'll be Catholic, would turn into what it's turned into.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes there's such a providence in stories where there are these small decisions that lead to much bigger fruit that we couldn't have foreseen, because it's a good reminder of that it's all grace. You know, our part is just this little yes,
yeah,
and then God opens it up. It's actually, you know, going back to your analogy, you know, childbirth, you know, it's when we try to hold on tight and do it ourselves that we actually put an obstacle between ourselves and God's grace. And so it's just a little yeses.
Some of us are slow learners. Some of us keep holding on tight, and Jesus, like, just like, let go of the death grip. Like, trust me, I have this. And he continues to remind us of that. But yes, it's been a hard last 14 years, but it's also been sanctifying. And if I had to go back and say, people often ask, you know, if you could take away Luke's suffering, would you? Yes, of course I would take away his suffering. Right. But we are this because of that. I would never take away what we became because of this really hard thing, because it was an opportunity for us to really get to know Jesus in an even more fruitful and fulfilling way that I would never have been able to do on my own. He invited suffering into our life, and we willingly took it, even though there were some moments that I was like, Jesus, I don't know what you're doing here. Mm-hmm. But then I look back at the fruits and I think, thank God we kept saying yes out of just the sheer will of like, we are not going to give up on this kid. We are not going to give up on our marriage. You know, we're going to do whatever it is that we need to do to get to this place, never knowing really how beautiful and fruitful it was going to be.
Right.
But it changed us in so many good ways.
Yeah.
I had to write a book about it.
Tell us about the book. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm Texan. So it should have a pronunciation guide in there, but there's an audio book too, if you want to hear that.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Live Big, Love Bigger. I really wanted people to see where we were as a family before and then where we were after. And while I wrote it from a family perspective, the priest that wrote the foreword does not have a family. He's a priest. And so I wanted people to see that the lessons are universal. You know, there's one chapter in there about what to say yes to and what to say no to. I call it a hell yes or a no, like make your yeses count for something.
Yeah.
And Luke's sort of entrance into our life forced us to say, I can't do it all. And I'm type A, like I do all the things. And Luke forced me to say, well, you can do all the things, but what's going to suffer? So instead of doing all the things, what do you really need to say yes to in this season right now? And it's helped us decide what activities to do with our kids, you know, what interests to help them pursue, and then what that looks like in our family culture. So we took a big barbecue pilgrimage. We went around the state of Texas. The Texas Monthly Magazine has the top 50 joints. So we loaded up all six of our kids in our minivan and drove 2,000 miles to eat barbecue. It took us 10 months, you know, weekends here, a week there, and we encountered Christ along the way. There's a beautiful basilica in South Texas, so we prayed Stations of the Cross, and then we went and had barbecue with tacos. And so we had this opportunity to inject Jesus into our pilgrimage, but also have some really good barbecue along the way. So that's our family culture, but I think I probably would have never done that had it not been for some of the things that we experienced as a young married couple.
Well, I love that theme, you know, this question of what to say yes to. I talk a lot about the cardinal virtues, and the first of the virtues is prudence, and really what that virtue comes down to is this intentionality that oftentimes we just kind of let life happen to us. And even, again, the good things as well as the painful things, and this intentional turning to things to say, no, I'm gonna say yes to this, whether it's this good thing I'm affirming for my family, or yes to the suffering that God is allowing to happen in his wisdom that I don't understand yet. This intentional turning and saying yes to things, that's the beginning. That's what enables the journey to continue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and sometimes we often think it's a yes or a no between a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's our problem.
Right.
I think most of us, morally speaking, know what's good for us and what's bad for us. I think where we get into trouble is when we have so many good things and we don't know which one to discern to take us down this path. And I think when you start to invite God into that conversation, that you say, what is it that you want for me? Like, you know my wishes, I'm going to tell them to you, but what is it you desire for me? And which good things should I set to the side for a moment, or maybe forever, and which things should I turn to? And I think oftentimes we rely on ourselves to make that decision instead of inviting God into that conversation. I think that's what Luke really taught us, was there are so many good things that he's asking of you, but what is he asking of you right now, today? And it has helped us, I think, build a family culture where our kids feel comfortable talking to us. Of course, they're teenagers. I got four teenagers right now.
Oh, boy.
God bless America. But I think that they are teaching me how to be a better mom, because I'm like, should I win this argument or should I just let this go? I think we're going to stay even and let this go and know that the greater fruit is going to come later.
Yeah.
And so that ability to really think about what God wants you to say yes to has been really transformative for our family.
That's a really wonderful point, this question of choosing the good or the better, right? Because, there's always a million good things we could be doing.
Right.
You know, I could be on the internet arguing with people who are wrong right now, you know?
Right? But fortunately, so you said no.
You know, it reminds me of the story of, you know, Martha and Mary, right? She has chosen the better part. It's not that what Martha was, like, she was trying to do good things, certainly. We've all been in that moment where we're just scrambling, trying to do all the good things. But that is that crucial question. But what does God want me to do right now?
Yeah.
Because it's through that that he'll bring about the good. He'll bring about the fruit and the full maturation of the fruit, you know, that I'm just seeing the beginnings of.
And I mean, and I have to give a lot of credit to my husband, who I know did not go to church very often in college, but now works for the church and raises money for our diocese. And I look at him as a strong man of faith, but like someone who was well catechized and needed a good Protestant girlfriend to bring him back, you know, on Sundays. But I think that the evolution of our faith life as a family has certainly been informed by how much he loves God and how much our children see that in him. And I know that many of those moments that I was doubting, I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, I don't know if what Jesus is asking me is what I can do. And he would look at me and he would say, Catherine, I think we can do it. Like, I think we can do it together. And allowed me the ability to believe in myself, but also to believe in our marriage that we were going to do this together, that God hadn't brought us together, you know, by happenstance, but really it was intentional how he brought us together. And that I want our children to see that we are a partnership and he is an amazing man of faith. And I think that I fell in love with the church because he fell in love with it first.
Yeah.
And I had this great role model in me, you know, to see in him what a good and holy place the Catholic Church could be for our family. And forever indebted to his mom, who is really faithful, and so many people in his family. But I should mention that since I became Catholic, my brother converted, wow, my sister-in-law converted, and both of my parents came into the church.
Oh, beautiful.
So we joked when my dad passed away 2 years ago, he had more priests at his funeral than years he had been Catholic. So he'd been Catholic 8 years and 9 priests were at his funeral. And it was such a beautiful full circle moment of my dad, who was sort of reluctant. We never thought ever that he would join the church. And yet he and my mom both came into the church, and it's a really beautiful thing that we got to share. And so, as talking about sacraments and how the intentionality of like a mass, I have never felt more loved in the last week of his life as we introduced those sacraments to my dad. And certainly as we sent him off to his heavenly reward at his funeral, I was moved by his funeral mass. And many people that were not, so you have to remember, like, our families of origin were not Catholic at all. And so many of our family and friends came to us and said, what a testament to the faith. Like, they were so touched by the beauty of the liturgy.
Wow.
And so it was my dad's sort of parting gift, you know. So I look at all those moments and I think, man, God really did see the stair step of how that was going to build, and allowed us to fully enter into the suffering, but also allowed us to fully see the joy and the grace.
That's so beautiful. You mentioned earlier that you'd come back around to get to know Mary in a way that you hadn't before. Talk about that a little bit.
I was hoping you weren't getting... No, I'm glad that you asked. I'm glad that you asked. Yeah, so I did this deep dive on Mary. I was really curious as to why so many Catholics were so enamored with her. Like, I knew she was in the nativity scene. One of my favorite scriptures is the Visitation, when Mary goes to visit Elizabeth.
Yeah.
But I think I was worried, like, if I started to turn my attention to Mary, was I turning it away from Christ, from God? And a couple of years ago, I got to go to Lourdes. I'd been to Fatima before, and while Fatima was a beautiful place to be, it wasn't really a big moment of encounter for me. So I had low expectations going to Lourdes. And when I got there, that's when things started to shift for me. Not so much that I fell more in love with Mary, but that I could see how much she loved her son. Mm. And I think after having our little boy who was in the NICU, to know how deeply I wanted him to be healed, brought me a new perspective on her. And so it's sort of been, she is very patient, praise the Lord, that she's allowed me to sort of get to know her in a different way. I think Lourdes was a big breakthrough for me. Just the peacefulness that's there. It's a really stunning place just to look around, but it's the peace. It's the intangible peace. And I was fresh off losing my dad, and I think my heart was open to saying, like, I'm sure there's some healing and some solace that needs to happen, and she delivered. And so not long after that, I did a 3-day special on SiriusXM. I did about Mary, like really diving into what are apparitions, what does a consecration mean, and really was introduced to some amazing people, I think, who opened my eyes to what a relationship with her might look like. And I had a priest remind me, he said, Catherine, you can't love Mary too much. He said, because when you love her, you inherently, what does she always do? She always turns your gaze, your desire to get to know Jesus better. She is always, you know, pointing to her son. And so I think hearing it said that way allowed me to maybe see her in a little bit different way. And also this kindred spirit of like, there's another woman who understands what it's like to give birth, you know, to see people suffer and not be able to do anything but to love them. And so I'm working on it. I do like her. I'm not necessarily like on the super big fan bus yet, but I do have this appreciation for the sacrifices that she made and this this really exceptional love, this gentle push, like now is your time to do your first public ministry and have your first miracle at Cana. Like I see this gentle nudge and I see it with my kids as they're getting older. I'm starting to find myself identifying more and more with her the older that I get.
Yeah. Well, it's part of that ongoing journey. Again, like so many aspects of your journey were just, you know, these little yeses to God that he keeps opening us to, up more to his plan, his design. He created our universe and he chooses to work through people, to work through events, and sometimes in ways that we're just not ready for. And so it's always a journey just to be open to more. Okay, God, reveal to me a little bit more of how you do things.
Right.
You know, how you choose to reveal grace, how you choose to minister to me. Yeah.
Now he keeps giving us opportunities to do that. Yeah. And I keep thinking, like, just when you think you have it figured out, right, another wing to the house opens up.
Yes.
Another area that you hadn't thought that was possible. And I think that's what I've seen in her. It's what I've seen with each one of our children, our opportunities for sanctification, I call them. But I wouldn't be the Catholic that I am today had it not been for my husband and our 6 children and that whole journey to get to that point. And really grateful that this naive 21-year-old who just fell in love with this really good-looking guy and thought, that church sounds fun. I think I'm so grateful that God sent that really handsome man into my life because it changed the trajectory of our family.
That's wonderful. Well, we have just about 2 minutes left. So if you would take a moment and just speak to someone who has come from a background that you came from, again, different theological traditions, you know, experiences of people and communities that love Jesus, and maybe is curious about the Catholic Church. Maybe they've met a Catholic and they're intrigued. What's a word of encouragement you can give to them?
I mean, I'd say to them, don't be afraid to ask the questions, but also don't be afraid to really commit, even if you don't have all the things resolved. I think sometimes we think that we must be at peace with every teaching, with everything that we do in the church. And instead, I think God is saying, like, let's get these few things right. Like, do you love the Eucharist? Which I always did, by the way. That was never a sticking point for me. Let's start there and then just ask. Don't be afraid to ask the questions, because I think it's through our curiosity is what keeps us falling in love with Jesus. Like, curiosity is something that I think is sometimes not elevated to the place that it should be. It's like, we want people to be curious, because when you're curious, you're open. So I think that I would just encourage them to continue to ask the questions, but also don't be afraid to just dive in. Like, if it's a relationship where God wants you to draw closer to him, you should do it. Don't be afraid to leave yourself vulnerable because you're afraid of what might happen. Instead, be excited about what God is asking of you.
Amen.
I think it can be really beautiful.
Yeah, if we trust God and we really believe that he is all good, all knowing, all powerful, then we know that if we trust him and we just take one step forward, like, he'll direct us.
Yeah.
He'll guide our paths. Sometimes we find in our hearts that, oh, maybe I don't really believe God is as big as I thought I did, because I'm worried that I'm going to make a wrong step and mess up his plan. Can't mess up God's plan.
You can try, and trust me, I've tried, but he's bigger than that. Thankfully, he's bigger than our mistakes. But I think it was the single best decision that God allowed me to make. And I am deeply grateful for where we are today and where I was all those years ago and for everything in between.
Amen. Well, God is good. Thank you so much, Kathy, for sharing your story. And again, I encourage people to check out your book, Live Big, Love Bigger, Getting Real with Barbecue, Sweet Tea, and a Whole Lot of Jesus. And they can find information about that at www.catherinewhitaker.net. So thanks again, Catherine.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of the Journey Home program. I pray that Catherine's story has been an inspiration to you. And I want to remind you that you can check out chnetwork.org, where we've got the archive of this program and so many other stories from every imaginable background, people who have discovered the truth and beauty of the Catholic Church and come home. And if you are on a journey, we want to encourage you. So check out chnetwork.org and let us know. We'd love to be praying for you and with you on your continuing journey with Jesus. God bless you. We'll see you again next week.